can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time.
Welcome to the Film Stage Podcast. I'm Drew Robert.
I'm Dan Mecca.
And I have to apologize in advance for my cold.
Yeah, but it's gross.
I hope it's not too bad.
It's disgusting.
Today is, what, January 2nd, 2001?
Yes, I think.
So, as there were no new releases, and a certain film that we were going to review appears on at least one of our top 10 lists, we decided to do it kind of a year in review, go through some different sections of, like, well, the worst movies we saw, most overlooked, overrated, disappointing, and just kind of talk about our whole year.
Yeah, just the journey that has been 2010.
Yes. Yes, sir. All right, well, let's jump into it, why don't we? Most overlooked and underrated films.
Okay. So hit me with it.
So here's how we'll do it. Maybe we'll say our top. Like, we count it down from five. So we'll do, I'll throw out five, you throw out your five, talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
So my number five for me would be Faster.
Mm, which I do agree with. It didn't make my list, but totally.
Yes, this movie got a 43% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Unnecessary.
I thought it kind of, you know, people have been complaining about some of the action films this year. I mean, A-Team was received pretty well, but, I mean, almost every other summer blockbuster outside of Inception, because kind of disappointing.
Yeah, especially action-oriented.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, definitely.
And while Faster is not the all-out rock action film you want, I think it goes deeper than that, and that's why I really enjoyed it. It gets into, you know, without being cheesy, themes of revenge.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a very wholesome action movie. You know, it's a very much kind of like an exploitation film without the exploitation in a lot of ways. You know, there's not a lot of, you know, there's no nudity, there's no cursing. So, I mean, you know, and there's violence, but really, I mean, it's not even, I mean, I saw it with my 13-year-old brother, and I was never, you know, worried or frustrated that, like, he was seeing something that was really violent. You know what I mean? It's a very kind of, it's funny, I mean, it's just a very well shot, well edited movie. It's quick. I mean, yeah. You know, it starts with a bang, and I don't know, I was just surprised, I guess, that people weren't as responsive.
And it's not like Machete or Expendables, where the reason people are seeing it is because of the gratuitous violence.
Well, like, exactly, and I think that might have been part of the problem, you know, because, yeah. Not that Machete did well, but, like, the Expendables did well, and, you know, you went to that, I guess, to see the ultra-violence and to see all these, like, action heroes kind of just beat the shit out of each other. And that's good, I guess. I mean, if you're looking for that kind of thing, but, you know, then The Expendables does succeed in that way. But, like, Faster just doesn't go for that, and maybe people were just, I don't know, maybe they weren't expecting it, maybe the marketing kind of fumbled or something, but there was a miscalculation, and it's a shame.
Yes, sir. Yeah. All right, well, hit me.
Kind of in the same vein, do I do five now?
Oh, yeah, okay, hit your number five.
Five. My five is actually on the other side of the spectrum, and it is Morning Glory, which we talked about, we reviewed. Roger Mitchell movie. Nothing, this movie's not, I mean, look, it's not Notting Hill. You know, I love Notting Hill. That was probably one of the best, you know, rom-coms of the last 10 years, and that was directed by Mitchell as well. And this is not that. I'm not going to say that, but it's just a really, you know, for my money, a really, you know, well-written movie, a smart movie, very genre, obviously. You kind of do know where it's going, but, you know, there's a lot of smart things, smart scenes, nice characters. Harrison Ford is better than he's been in a long time, which I know isn't saying too much, but, I mean, you know, he's enjoying himself, and we're enjoying him in the film. So he's a pleasure to watch, and Rachel McAdams just steals the show. Like, she is so adorable and so spunky and just so alive on screen, and she really just chews up scenery. And it's just kind of a shame that, like, the movie came and really went with, you know, moderate reviews. I think it's around 50% on Rotten Tomatoes, and, you know, just a kind of a collective shrug. And it's just a movie that I don't really feel deserve that. I mean, there are some things about it that are, you know, obviously, are lacking. You know, it does leave things to be desired. But it was a movie that I feel like deserved an audience.
I just find it funny when there's movies like The Bounty Hunter and Killers, which, I mean, admittedly did bad with critics as well, but, like, they, I think, respectable box office, if I'm not mistaken. Not killers,
but, I mean, like, you know, The Bounty Hunter.
Like, people just, you know, I don't know, like, I feel like they, when a movie finally comes out like Morning Glory, that kind of delivers on that genre.
Right. So I mean, like, it just, you know, yeah. I mean, sad, yeah. Like, I totally agree. So it's like, yeah, I mean, because The Bounty Hunter they didn't do amazing here, but it did really well overseas, I think. True, and it's just kind of, you wonder why a movie like that hits and a movie like Morning Glory, which is just so much better in that same vein, doesn't. You know, maybe it has to do with being more of a comedy or something like that, but who's to say? But definitely just a disappointment that people decided that Morning Glory was a disappointment. So,
yeah. All right. Well, my number four, and I think you may agree.
Right, and this has very kind of similar to Faster, actually.
Yes, The Next 3 Days, which I was surprised the Paul Haggis film is on my list. You know, I mean, because I'm not.
Yeah, no, I mean, The Valley of Allah was overrated. Yeah, I mean, that was a very overrated movie. I think we both felt like that.
And, I mean, I'll admit the first, I would say, half of The Next 3 Days is slow, but I was never, you know, I was never pissed off about it.
Engaging, like, it's an interesting story.
Yeah, and then, I mean, the last third I loved, like every, you know, I mean, it plays into the genre that it's at. It's kind of a chase, but it's handled really well, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, Russell Crowe is very, very respectable. I mean, and we'll talk about this later, Russell Crowe's had a rough couple of years, actually, and it's funny just because, you know, he's had these movies that really aren't that bad, and I guess people have just decided that he's just not a movie star anymore, and so we'll talk about a little bit more of that later. Elizabeth Banks isn't doing comedy here, and she's very good as like the kind of wife on the edge who's in prison who has to get broken out by her husband who's Russell Crowe, and there's a lot of things. The movie takes some turns that you don't expect, actually, like dramatic wise, and Brian Dennehy gives like a nice, really short, sweet performance as Russell Crowe's father. There's a lot of really interesting scenes and stuff. It kind of surprisingly. It's a surprisingly engaging movie that kind of, in the same vein of Faster, I guess maybe it was marketed wrong, maybe came out at the wrong time of the year, and no one saw it.
Yep.
It's a shame.
All right, yours?
I am going to go ahead and put Love and Other Drugs on my number four spot, because this is just a movie that, at the end of the day, it wasn't the sum of its parts, but its parts are something to watch, and so I feel like, you know, you're going to go into this movie and you're going to get something out of it because it literally gives you so much. And all of the stuff that it gives you, it's all well done, but unfortunately it just never really, you know, it never really becomes a cohesive whole. You know what I mean? It never becomes something that sticks, I guess. But, you know, great performance by Jake Gyllenhaal. Good performance of Anne Hathaway, maybe a little overdone, but a strong performance by her. And a great little supporting performance by Hank Azaria. And it's kind of a shame that no one will see a couple of great scenes that he's in. And it's kind of just like that guy's whole career. Like, he's just great in movies, really just... he's upstaged by just other people and other movies. And hopefully one day he gets the recognition he deserves, you know. And also, it's nice to see Ed Zwick come back to the About Last Night, you know. What is it, 30-something world that he used to, you know, own, so...
I can partially agree with you on that. You can listen to our full review if you want. No. So my number three, I think you might agree with this.
I totally agree with you.
Night and Day.
Yeah. And thank you for putting on there. I actually totally forgot about that.
Yes. Yeah. And just, I'm not going to say like Dark Tooth and films that just, I mean, our audience knows like that weren't just not overlooked because the sake of not getting a wide release.
Right. I'm gonna dip into that a little bit actually. Yeah, but
which is good.
But yeah. It's good that But, yeah, it's good that you're not. I'm a little bit. But, yeah, like a movie like Dogtooth, you know, Kino International is not trying to, you know, they're not trying to fucking, you know, open
There's
wide.
No
they don't have the money
to
open wide. You know, it's not like, so that's understandable.
So,
but, yeah.
But Night and Day, I thought this was quite an enjoyable action comedy.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just, you know, it's a movie that really doesn't get made anymore. And I think the box office kind of explains why. It's just, you know, I guess it does get made, but in a different way. I mean, it's a caper that doesn't take itself seriously, and we've talked about this before. It seems we live in an age where people are taking themselves very, very, very seriously, which is why I'm a little worried about The Green Hornet, honestly, and its box office receipts, because, I mean, we're getting more excited about it as it gets closer after, you know, the January release date was strange but now it's getting closer and we're getting more excited about it and everything. And it just, I don't know, it just seems like, you know, Night and Day was this movie that, yeah, it was ridiculous, but, yeah, you had Tom Cruise just giving a really funny performance.
One of the most fun performances
I've
had
this year. Laughing a lot watching this, just laughing a lot. Cameron Diaz, I mean, honestly, Cameron Diaz is a limited actress.
Speaking of Green Hornet,
yeah.
Which
my
I
gosh,
heard she
connection.
Is one of the worst parts in that.
Yes.
But here, it shouldn't bother me too much.
No. I mean, you know, and she did, and I think she definitely did well with what she had. I agree with our buddy Connor. I was talking to him about this movie, and he said that role, the Cameron Diaz role, probably could have been cast better, but it wasn't. So she's in it, and I think she does a fine job. But either way, I mean, like I said, James Mangold, who directed it, is a very capable director. It moves, you know, really fast. It's really fun. Yeah. The John Powell score is really solid. And this is the name of the guy who did How to Train Your Dragon?
Yes, yeah. Sir.
And so I just think it was just oddly overlooked. I don't know if it's the cruise thing still. I don't think it is.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I mean, I'm just looking at the box office. It's interesting how people how this is kind of a bomb. When, I mean, domestically, yeah, $76 million, but it made $261 total. Which is quite...
And it's funny because that's only $30 million less than Salt made altogether. Yeah. And, like, people think of Salt as a success and Night and Day as a failure. And they cost the same amount, and they made only $30 million differently. Yeah. It's kind of an interesting little thing there. Yes. My next is Never Let Me Go. And this is a movie that did get a wide enough release to get noticed in terms of, you know, what Fox or had the chance. Right? Fox
yeah. Well, wide enough to get noticed, but not wide.
But my point is, like, The Fighter, like, wide enough to get noticed. The Fighter got noticed. It's doing well.
Right.
Never Let Me Go. Didn't get noticed. It made $2 million. But just
Fighter had a limited expansion. They always plan to expand it wide. I'm just saying it's more comparable to something like Black Swan.
Okay. Or, like, it started limited. Or the King's Speech.
And the King's Speech.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So those movies. Okay. So anyway, the point is the King's Speech, Black Swan, they're doing well. And I guess kind of almost like 127 Hours in a way. Like, it just never Let Me Go never caught with audiences. And even with critics, I mean, it's only like 60% Rotten Tomatoes. And it's just kind of surprising. I don't really know why. I mean, it's just a beautiful movie, beautifully shot, beautifully lit, beautifully acted. Carey Mulligan gives, I would say, Carey Mulligan gives what might be her best performance in that movie. I mean, I love her in An Education, pardon me. But there just seems to be more going on with her in this movie. And so I just loved watching her. And Andrew Garfield, aside from a couple little scenes where it gets a little ridiculous, it just also is very commanding. And Keira Knightley is better than she's been in some time. So, I mean, you have these three great leads, these three young thespians just killing the screen. Mark Romanek just toning everything down and just making it all raw. And then, and I don't know, I'm surprised it didn't hit the way it did.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a great novel. It's a great adaptation. Alex Garland, a great script. And I have a feeling this is going to be a Blade Runner type of a thing. I have a feeling
there were some comparisons.
It's more romance than it is sci-fi. I mean, this is not Blade Runner, but in terms of cult movies, I feel like this is going to be a movie. Yeah. Also, like Sunshine, also Fox Searchlight, like, that will live on past its box office receipts. So.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I didn't absolutely love it, but it definitely doesn't deserve what it got.
Well, it just doesn't deserve kind of, you know, like all these movies, it doesn't deserve just to be kind of ignored.
Yeah. Especially, I mean, like you said, awards potential, which I think this is better, more deserving than some
awards potential. Definitely. Like, yeah. Well, I mean, I had it, and, you know, I mean, we'll talk about it. I mean, it's one of my honorable mentions of the year, so.
Yes. All right.
And you, Jordan?
Yes, my number two, Youth in Revolt. Well, I mean, it got a 68%.
It did, but
I don't think anyone remembers this movie came out this year.
No. Nope.
And, I mean, I barely did. No, but I saw this.
It came out, like, January 7th.
Yeah, very first like weekend, that, yeah. Almost exactly a year ago. And this is Miguel Arteta. You know, a comedy, coming-of-age comedy, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
Based on a quite popular book. And yeah, starring Michael Cera, and I just had a great time. I thought this was one of the better comedies of this year. If we made a top 10 list of comedies, it would be on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a very weak year for comedies. But
that's
yeah.
true. That's also true. I mean, and I just had a great time with it. And it's funny that I mean, and it isn't necessarily a bomb either in terms of gross. I mean, it made $19 million on 18, and it is funny how people are saying, you know, Scott Pilgrim. Which we will talk about definitely later,
right.
Is, like, I mean, it made half of Scott Pilgrim domestically, which is actually impressive for Youth in Revolt, you know?
Yeah, and just considering the release dates and everything.
And people are always talking about Scott Pilgrim and not Youth in Revolt. But anyways, I don't know, you saw this movie, you liked it, right?
Oh yeah, I saw Youth in Revolt, and I definitely considered putting this on my list, actually. It was right there. Funny movie. It never really becomes anything memorable. That's probably its biggest problem. It takes chances, but never, like, cashes in kind of a thing. But you know, but Michael Cera, he's playing two roles, and yeah. It's very funny.
And it's funny, Zach Galifianakis, and he, right, yeah. I mean, even Due Date, which, I don't know if that's on your disappointing list.
But, no, yeah, almost, but.
But,
no.
But I mean, that.
Did well.
And yeah. It's
well, I mean, Downey Jr. is huge, though.
Yeah,
I think.
But I mean, actually, it's kind of have a funny story, which we'll also talk about.
Right, we'll talk about that. Yeah, yeah.
So not a great year for Zach Galifianakis in terms of.
Well, I mean, he'll be right back on top with Hangover 2 next year.
True.
So. But my number two is gonna be, Night Catches Us, and this is kind of what we were talking about with me talking about limited releases. Night Catches Us was released by Magnolia, and they tend to, I mean, it was released on demand and theatrical simultaneously, and yeah, it's just a movie. It's about, for those of you who don't know, and you probably don't know, it's a movie about Anthony Mackie and Kerry Washington. Anthony Mackie plays an ex-Black Panther who comes home after kind of running away from something, we don't know what it is, and Kerry Washington and him have a history, and when he comes back home, which is a suburb of Philadelphia, or the city of Philadelphia, rather, he's greeted as a traitor, and we don't really know why, and we discover why, and this is over the course of just 90 minutes. And it's an impressive first movie, I believe, by Tanya Hamilton, who's an NYU grad, I think, or a Columbia grad, one of those two. And very strong writing, very strong performances. There's some odd animation stuff that doesn't really work. There's some archive footage, like buffering stuff that kind of gets a little long tooth there. Mm-hmm. At the end, but overall, it's just a really nice, small movie with great performances and great writing, and a great performance by this child actor. I cannot remember her name, but she kills it as Kerry Washington's daughter. And it's just kind of a shame that a movie like that, I mean, you know, like, Blue Valentine is going to get noticed because Weinstein is championing it. Magnolia doesn't really champion its movies, so Night Catches Us would have had to really start a fire in order to get noticed. It's just kind of a shame.
It is funny just to think about that, like, what movies, you know, because, like, with these film festivals, out of, there's, you know, dozens of stories of, oh, this distributor picked it up, and everyone's like, okay, whatever, I'll be able to see it. But it is funny, like, how important it is for some, like, a movie out like Submarine, got picked up by Weinstein, so that's quite good for it, and it's just funny.
Well, like, it could be, but, like, that's the thing, though, like, that's the thing, it's twofold, it's, you know, do you want to get picked up by Weinstein? Yeah, if they're hot about your movie, right? And
that,
like,
is true.
You know, because look at Weinstein and the Tillman Story.
Yeah.
Weinstein was hot about the Tillman Story. They bought it, and then they kind of dumped it. Like, they tried it out, and they got real cold feet. I think it wasn't bringing in the box office, and it didn't even make $1 million. Like, that movie was hot when it came out of Sundance or wherever it came out of. Like, that was a hot documentary, I remember. And then, you know, Blue Valentine, you know, they kind of almost in a weird way got lucky with the NC-17 stuff.
Well, they played that up.
That's what I mean. And so then all of a sudden, like, it becomes this, like, you know, like, social, cultural, weird little mini zeitgeist thing going around, and then all of a sudden it comes out, and it's like, people know about it.
It did quite well this week.
And it did quite well, right. And so, Night Catches Us just, I don't really think ever got that chance. I mean, Magnolia, like I said, Magnolia is only going to do that for a few movies. I mean, that's like a movie like Diggers is Magnolia, and that's like this movie I champion all the time with Paul Rudd that came out in like 06, and no one saw it, no one will ever see it. It's like this great little movie about clam, you know, diggers.
And I can back you up on that.
Right,
it's not just
right.
You.
Yeah, exactly. No, right, yeah. So, like, I bought that movie off Amazon, like 3 weeks after it came out for, like, $4. You know what I mean? Like, that's how dumb this movie was. And then, you know, that's just the way of the world right now. And with On Demand, hopefully it'll change. But, like, it's just a shame. I just hope that here's the thing. I hope Tanya Hamilton, I hope that's her name, I hope she gets to make another movie because of the critical praise that Night Catches Us did receive, at least in a limited way. So look for her
yes.
in the future.
Now my number one
mm-hmm.
of 2010,
mm-hmm.
for most overlooked, is Flipped. Rob
mm-hmm.
Reiner's Flipped.
Okay.
I mean, with the other ones, I didn't really give a plot summary, but this one, since you probably have never even heard of it because of the release, this tells the story. It is based on a book, too, which
it
your sister
is. It is. Yeah.
Which you sold me. But, I mean, it's a coming-of-age story. Over the span of, 10 years, I think, of, longer than that, I think, of a girl and a boy
right.
living across the street from each other, and as the title hints at, there is this flipped technique that Rob Reiner uses, where they tell the side of the story from the boy, I think that's first, and then the girl,
mm-hmm.
and then the boy, and then the girl, and same situations. And while some movies do this and it doesn't work at all, I think it works great for this because it really does show you a completely different perspective. It's not just, you know, little things. And seriously one of the most emotional roller coasters that I went on this year in terms of being gripped from start to finish with the movie. You know, definitely a sweet burst of nostalgia, as people have
said. Oh, totally, yeah. I mean, you know, Return to Form for Rob Reiner because of, you know, Stand By Me and those movies from the 80s that he really just kind of owned. He hasn't really done that in a while. And I definitely, you know, I didn't love it as much as you did, but, like, I see the love. You know, I see why, and I did quite enjoy it. There's a great, great performance by Anthony Edwards in it as the kid's father, the boy's father, rather, and two great little performances by the two romantic leads, the boy and the girl. And so, yeah, I mean, it is a shame. I don't really know what happened with that.
Yeah, I mean, for the little backstory, it was going to come out in August, the first week, limited, and then Warner Brothers decided they were going to do this, like, push into, like, the heartland, like, because, I mean, it is a movie, I mean, like, in the Midwest and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I guess it just didn't go anywhere, and I was lucky enough. They set up a screening in Rochester when I was there, and I got to see it. And then literally, I think it was the next day or the next week, they said, "Oh, we're not gonna release this at all anymore." So
yeah,
it was planning to go wide. I think August 28th. I think I pulled it last minute, and then it is out on DVD now. So I mean, this is a movie that I literally, like, there's not many movies this year that I would recommend to absolutely anyone, and this would be one that I could recommend heartily.
Yeah,
to
totally.
Anyone.
Man, this is successful.
All audiences.
Yeah, yes. Totally.
And then your number one.
My number one is a little bit of both. Both sides of the spectrum. I have Carlos, the IFC / Sundance movie that was 5.5 hours long. Mm-hmm. Olivia Sayas movie about Carlos the Jackal, and Ridley Scott's Robin Hood. You know, big studio movie, small movie that is 5.5 hours long that no one will ever see, and but it's getting thankfully a lot of critical praise right now.
Thanks to us. Later.
Thanks to us, and also thanks to people like New York Times.
Yes,
but yeah, I mean, Robin Hood, it was funny. Robin Hood was one of those movies that I saw it, and I guess, I don't know, I was just surprised that it was shrugged off the way it was. And, you know, I mean, the archery in it is amazing.
I mean, I think it also, like almost, if you look on Rotten Tomatoes, almost everyone complaint is that it's not really about Robin Hood, you know?
Right, but I just don't understand.
If I knew
going
into that, I liked it better. And also that I had the lowest of low expectations. But still, I was...
Yeah, it's just a funny thing. It's like, you know, I guess maybe another big problem is, like, you know, if you're going to try to do something different, do it actually different. I guess people's problem maybe also is that it was a fairly standard story, and it wasn't the story that people were expecting. And so it's like twofold.
Two things,
But I mean, it's a hero's journey. There is comedy. For some reason, I think that the chemistry between Cate Blanchett and Robin Hood is there, or Russell Crowe is there, and a lot of people had complaints about that. But I thought that I liked it a lot. I mean, you know, it's one of those movies too that, like, in this age of internet and stuff, I think this, Robin Hood is a perfect example of how a movie can die online, because, or just online and periodicals and everything, because there are the plagued production things, you know, the script got rewritten and all this stuff happened. Russell Crowe was disagreeing with, you know, Brian Helgeland and all this different stuff.
More people read those stories.
Well, exactly. Awesome. And then the movie comes out and people kind of just are like, oh, okay. No. Well, yeah, I can tell here that this is like what went wrong and all this stuff. And, like, you know, you're like looking through the movie, not at the movie. And so, I mean, but like, Never Let Me Go, I think, and also, like, Kingdom of Heaven, I think that's a movie, which is also Ridley Scott, I think that's a movie that just, you know, it's going to come out, and it's not really a before-its-time movie, it's not as though, like, this movie's doing revolutionary things, but it's just an at-the-wrong-time movie, and I think maybe after, out of the, you know, the recession, maybe, or something like
it's
that.
It's not Scott Pilgrim, which was before its time.
No, yeah, okay. Yep, sure.
Alright. Well, I think we're gonna know what most are rated films now. Anyways.
Yes. Would you like to start with your overrated?
Well,
me to start?
You start, because I have to start.
Okay, number five. I'm not gonna say too much about this, but I'll just say that it's The Kids Are Alright. And when I saw it, I really liked it. I really, really did. And I do still like it. But it is not one of the best movies of the year. I don't know.
And if we're literally talking about rated, like, The
yeah, and everybody loves it, and I don't know. I love the girl, Mia. How to say her name right, but Mia Wasikowska, or whatever, you know, something along those lines. I apologize if you're listening. is great. I love her. And Mark Ruffalo is great, and his nomination will be deserved. But Annette Bening, Julianne Moore, it's weird. I didn't really believe them.
Yeah.
Annette Bening was kind of just, you know, they're a
and
great.
And as liberal as they come.
I'm very liberal. I know. So no, and I mean, no, and this is the thing. Like, this is my thing. Like, you know, I think that's the problem with it, though. You know, it's like the Memento thing, right? It's like Memento, where you have this movie, and the structure of it is the movie, right? And that's why the movie's great. And if that structure wasn't there, it would just kind of be a pretty standard revenge film in a lot of ways, and that's an argument people make. But because Nolan makes because the structure becomes the actual, like, plot of the film, it becomes a whole different thing. Kids All Right, it's a lesbian couple, okay? And you have the sperm donor thing, which makes it interesting. But really, it becomes just a movie about infidelity. And the kids, and how they're affected, kind of. But not even the kids really aren't in it that much. And so it really, it becomes a movie that's really not that much different than anything we've seen. I mean, it's well done. But, like, I prefer Chodolenko. I prefer her other two movies that I've seen. I think this is her third film, but High Art and Laurel Canyon are both just, like, kind of really strange, interesting movies about femininity and about, like, sex and just this whole identity thing of, like, who you are and all. And it's just very interesting, both very imperfect movies, but I love them both. And, like, this movie is more perfect than those other two, and because of it, it feels false in a way. Like, I really dislike Julianne Moore in it.
Me too.
And I don't know, I really can't even put my finger on it. But, yeah, I said I wouldn't say much, and I've said a lot, but... But yeah, I mean that's just a movie that needs to be said. It needs to be said. That's number five for me, and yes. It's for you, Jordan.
Now I went through just so we do things a little differently.
Yeah, you did a little differently.
Rotten Tomatoes, everyone's favorite site in the world, I guess, had their top 100. They ranked their top 100 best reviewed films of 2010. So I went through, grabbed the ratings on the top 100 and went just down the list of what I disagreed with when I came across one. So, I mean,
very
there's
smart,
some movies that
smart.
I was like, you know, The Town is at 94%. I don't think it deserves that, but I enjoyed it, so yeah. I didn't put it on here.
Right.
But these are movies that I actively thought were mediocre or worse. So, after we get through Salt, 61%. I won't say that, but that's an honorable mention. Number five, yeah. Red. 70%, and no one talks about how bad it is.
It is an anomaly. It's an anomaly.
And it made a lot of money.
It is an anomaly of, like, just epic. I don't even know how it happened.
Everything about this movie is so. Every time a scene ends in this movie, you are just left like oh, okay.
I mean, I guess there are moments.
But not really, because
of something.
The Bruce Willis scene where if you want to go for action, like that scene where he gets out of the car. You know,
he, like, walks
trailer.
Out of the car,
yeah, like,
and shoots.
It's what it is in the trailer. So, I mean, I guess that's a fault of the marketing.
I mean,
but,
no,
and
I mean, it's a cool scene. But, yeah. I mean, there's, like, one scene where Carl Urban is, like, investigating a murder, or, like, he's, like, cleaning up a murder, rather, because he's a hitman or something, or he's an agent or something like that. And he's talking to his daughter about she got in a fight at school. And so, like, that's a funny scene, because it's, like, you know, he's being a nice dad, and he's cleaning up a murder he just committed, so, like, that's funny, but, like, there's that, and then there's, like, a thousand other things that just never really, like, mesh and stuff, and Don Malkovich is ridiculous, and it's, like, not even that funny,
and it feels like a comic
Helen
book,
Mirren,
a
what's
comic
she even
book.
Doing there, you know,
it's
just,
and it's based on, like, the comic book that people love, which is, from what I've heard, 100% darker than what's in here, like, it's very
right,
dark,
right.
And it feels like a comic book movie in, like, the worst way, like, there's, like, clever things, like, every so often that you can tell maybe were funny because it's not these, like, you expect something better from these four amazing acclaimed actors, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, Red would be my number fifth most funny
pick.
Film.
It's a good pick. My number four is going to be Harry Brown, which is kind of in the same vein as Red. It's like an action movie with old dudes that's bad. It's just, it's poorly written, poorly acted, gratuitous violence. Michael Caine's bad in it. I really just didn't like him in it, really. The plot is kind of, he's like an old curmudgeon who lives in, like, an apartment that's getting vandalized by the worst people in the entire world. It's just, like, this hellish part. It's like he lives in the refugee in Children of Men. it's kind and of no like, one's doing anything about
kind
it.
It's kind of like a, such a serious version of Gran Torino that it makes it kind of funny. Like, you know what I mean? I'm
trying to say. Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, it's like so, and like that's the thing. It takes itself so seriously. It's just very, very
like the opening
serious.
Scene, which I like, but it's like.
Well, no, it's got this like narc opening scene, which is sick. I mean, obviously, but you know, just in terms of like you know, visual kineticism, it's like wow, you know. But then it's just, I don't know, like he's got this friend who dies, and it's very silly, like a silly movie, and like, that's all I'm going
to
say, just
straight,
is that like 60-something or 70-something online? I don't know what happened. People love Michael Caine.
Yes.
People love Michael Caine, people love Morgan Freeman. Red, Harry Brown, boom.
That's how it gets done.
We'll move on.
All right, and maybe we are out of the age group, but I don't know if that's, well, anyways, in terms of Red and
Can we get younger? Let's get younger. Maybe we're out of the age group.
Yeah, for those.
Two. Oh, whatever. But still, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, a good movie is a good movie is a good movie.
It's true. All right, number four is actually, because I'm going by percent rankings, I'm going to do a little cheating here
with a
tie. So at 74% on Rotten Tomatoes, which three out of four critics gave a positive review to this. Iron Man 2. Let's get out of the way.
Right.
I mean, this movie has been talked about enough, I think. I even wrote an article about 10 reasons why. It just kind of sucked.
Right, and like at first I disagreed, now I completely agree. I think kind of like the opposite of what I hope for Never Let Me Go, this is a movie that came out and people, like hype pushed it through it. People were like, yeah, it's still funny, Robert De Niro's still funny, Robert Downey Jr.'s still funny, and all of this, but then after kind of the ecstasy wore off, you know, people were like, oh wait, it was kind of crappy.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm glad, I mean, with the reason that John Favreau was leaving this kind of gives me hope, you know, like.
Right, well, he apparently got the movie stolen away from him, yeah.
Could, you know, they could bring in someone that is not tired of the franchise, like it seems like he is.
Right.
And then also, his next project sounds interesting. Magic Kingdom, yeah.
Sounds interesting to you?
I think it does, yeah. I mean, I love Kingdom Hearts, the video game, so I think if, like.
Well, but Night at the Museum and.
Oh, it's nothing like that. Did you read the LA Times?
Oh, no, I didn't. It's different.
Yeah, it's different.
Oh my god! Okay.
Yeah, it's not people exploring Magic Kingdom.
Okay. Okay. Never mind.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can read more about that on LA Times. But anyways. Yeah. So Iron Man 2. Overrated.
Mickey Rourke's wasted. Sam Rockwell is wasted.
He owns the screen time,
but he's wasted.
Action was clunky.
You know, like there are good scenes, like the scenes where he's giving, where he's offering Mickey Rourke, or he's offering. Was it Mickey Rourke? Who's it? The guns?
Yeah.
Who's
he offering? Sam Rockwell is offering. I think, isn't it? Robert.
It's like the army, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like
army, Don Cheadle.
He's like, yeah. Oh, Don Cheadle. That's it. Don Cheadle. He's doing the gun thing with Don Cheadle. That's a funny scene. Yes. You know, the opening's funny in the courtroom. I kind of like that. Stuff like that is good.
I mean,
the scene where he gets drunk when it starts to look like it's going to be Devil in a Bottle. Like, you know, the graphic novel that's pretty thin. Like, when it starts to look to be going that way, it starts to get really good. And you're like, oh, hell yeah. Like, this is what we want. And then it doesn't do that.
And the father
is ScarJo's thrown in there, you know. And
I mean,
John Slattery
as
Howard Stark is really, really silly. The video.
The whole Avengers.
Like, you, my greatest creation.
The Avengers stuff, unnecessary as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Sam Jackson just has never been worse.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it's just stuff like that.
Yeah. And then on the same token, I think released around the same time, Splice, which is quite a divisive film. I did not like this movie.
Yeah, I actually have yet to see it.
All I can say is that, in terms of not spoiling it, but it gets so ridiculous at the end, and not in a way that, like Black Swan or something, where like it is insane, and I was loving it and into it the whole time. Poorly written, acted,
It's a poor movie.
And like Iron Man 2, a few good scenes, but I cannot believe the positive critical acclaim.
It's been a weird movie for this, hasn't it? I don't know, is every year like this? Like, you know, like Red, you know, Despicable Me, we're going to talk about like these movies that seem to be just getting like, maybe this is every year, but like it just seems like me and you have been on this like other side watching these people make these
in terms of underrated, like we said,
right? Yeah. So it's been a weird year for that stuff, but maybe I'm just being.
Do Do you want to talk about your number three?
Yeah. My number three. Yeah, this is actually okay. Well, this is divisive for me, Jordan. So take back what I just said. My number three is Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. I did enjoy it very much when I saw it in theaters. I did, but I found it, and this is I found it without much heart in terms of character. I did not care about Scott Pilgrim. I found him to be a cad, right? Someone who is, not a nice person. Relatively mean. There's not a lot that's redemptive about him. And just in general, he doesn't really deserve what he gets at the end. And furthermore, who he gets at the end is kind of a very, shallow, culturally infused, hair-dyed pixie girl who, is in the movie to be one, and it's kind of strange because that's exactly what she's supposed to not to want. And they do touch on that a little bit, but really in the most weak possible way. Like, Jason Schwartzman's just kind of like the main bad guy, and he's super anticlimactic. And you spend a lot of the movie kind of wishing that Chris Evans would come back, and that Brandon Routh would come back, and that Thomas Jane would come back with his great little cameo, and that Kieran Culkin would come back because he's really great as the gay roommate. And I don't know. I mean, yeah, the effects are great. They were. Edgar Wright is a great director, but it doesn't touch Hot Fuzz or Shaun of the Dead. I kind of left feeling like punked a little bit, kind of like Kick-Ass. I feel very similar. I mean, and Kick-Ass just missed this list. Like, I feel very similar about Scott Pilgrim the way I felt about Kick-Ass. Like, Kick-Ass, I enjoyed it immensely. I laughed. I enjoyed it. But at the end, I felt like I was cheated somehow. Like, I had to watch a movie that was about nothing, but it was real fun.
I was just going to say, this is an odd movie for me because most I've ever seen in the theater three times, Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
And I feel the same way. Like, I love this movie while I'm watching it. Like, just eat it up. Like, almost every part.
Right.
And then, and while I do agree that they could have cut, they didn't need seven villains. That gets away from maybe some of the character development. And that's something everyone's been talking about. Seven exes, sorry, not villains.
Yeah.
Well, I guess they are. But at the end of the day, and actually, it's sad to say this, but I feel similarly about Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. While those are better movies, I just watched them right before Scott Pilgrim, and I feel very little after watching them. And so I don't know if that makes it, a good... Like, I love all three movies. I love while I'm watching them. But, at the end of the day,
For example, how do you define this? I don't really... this is, the age-old question of art. How do you define this feeling? Ghost Rider, a schlocky B mystery thriller, directed by Roman Polanski, starring Ewan McGregor. Right? It's there's nothing about that movie that really hasn't been done before. It's on, but it's on all these top 10 lists, including my own, right? Number 5 on mine. And so it's why? I'm in the middle of rewatching it as we're recording this. And I'm rewatching it with, the joy of a child. I love these scenes, and I eat it up. I rewatched Scott Pilgrim, and I rewatched it, and like you said, I did enjoy it, but, I knew, it was like knowing there's no Santa Claus the night before Christmas. I knew that my parents were putting the presents on the Christmas tree, and even though I would love the day, I would know that, they were just picked out by, people I knew. You know what I mean? So, that is the difference, and it's more of a gut feeling than anything else. I don't know what Polanski does that Wright doesn't do, frankly. But yeah, it's just it's a very calculated experience, and I just don't really understand it, and Kick-Ass, I enjoyed more, I don't know. I was more emotionally attached or something. I don't even know. I don't know. Something about Kick-Ass felt a little bit more, authentic or something like that, but both movies just kind of, I don't know. I think it
has to do with editing style, to tell you the truth. I don't know. It moves at such a clip that you love it while you're watching it.
And I guess.
I don't know. With Kick-Ass, it felt like...
But Social Network moves it like a clip where you're boom, 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 boom,
And actually, similarly, after that movie, I didn't feel similar to Scott Pilgrim, but I didn't love it as much as everyone else, almost. I don't say because of that, but... I don't know. We'll talk about it when we get to Social Network.
It's a strange feeling. It's a strange thing, Scott Pilgrim. And I do hope... I don't know. I hope the best for that film, and I also just hope that it kind of goes away at the same exact time. So I mean, that's my three, and that's what I'll say, and that's it.
All right, and well, there's two.
What do you mean?
Like, there's we're doing top five. So.
No, no.
Oh, that's your three.
No, no, I mean, you do your
yes.
two.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Or wait, you got to do your three.
Yeah. So at 86%, two movies. Now this is 86 out of 100 critics. Let's just put that in perspective. I had a great time, or at least a good time.
Well, no, you didn't say your three.
Oh, I did not.
You're yeah, right, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You didn't my say three. Okay.
Your three. Go. Your three.
Reading comprehension.
Your three.
All right.
Your
three. Despicable Me at 81%.
Right, which is worth, I guess, mentioning.
I'm not going to talk about this for a while. I just thought that every other animated movie did better.
More. Right.
Did yeah. more with what they had. And it almost felt, Despicable Me, like a little, it pulled like the heart of Pixar out, and then it pulled like some of the cool 3D,
the kitsch of the like cool 3D DreamWorks.
And, yeah, the cool 3D and How to Train Your Dragon, which it's funny because obviously they were released at the same time, so they didn't kind of copied it, but elements of
right
that. And I just, it was a very mediocre viewing experience for me. And somehow, I mean, it's top five grossing films of the year, second highest.
Yeah, just hit a note. Right, just hit a note with people. You know, if it's strange.
The Minions,
you know.
I guess.
Yeah, Minions. Fucking Minions.
All right. Number two.
My number two is going to be Animal Kingdom. And I don't, it's like, I don't know about this movie. It's good, I guess. I guess I just don't understand what was so special about it.
Don't tell you my Franklin? Problem with it.
Hit me, tell me, enlighten me.
Yes,
enlighten me.
So I did love, I did like this movie and I loved certain elements, but my biggest problem with it was about 3/4 of the way in or so, it feels like they're doing another movie. Like, it feels like they're trying to add a lot in. Mm-hmm. Like, when it gets, so I don't know, like you saw, I mean, like, the most interesting part was this family dynamic, I thought, at least. And David McCode, is it?
Michaud? Yeah, Michaud. Yeah.
Michaud, style, I thought, was, I mean, just the cinematography he had, and also, like, the way he put it together. But yeah, so like, I think there's a moment, I'm trying to think, I don't want to go into spoilers, but do you feel that at all? Like 3/4 of the way?
Yeah, I mean, I guess like, in a way it runs out of steam, then, but yeah. Like, I never even really felt like there was much steam to begin with. I mean, it starts with a bang, kind of, with his mom ODing, and yeah. That's, like, powerful. And, you know, it's interesting to have, like, kind of, like, a really slow, like, Forrest Gump kind of a kid. Yeah. As like your lead character, or yeah. In a way.
See, I liked him in another.
Yeah, so that was. Well, I mean, that aspect has grown on me just because it is an interesting kind of thing. It's almost like making Fredo Corleone, like the main character of the movie, right? But that's kind of interesting. And so there's that. But like, just in general, nothing really. You know, like, you care about this one guy. You know, I guess this is kind of a spoiler. Like, for 30 minutes into the movie, you care about this one guy, Barry, and then he dies. And then it's like you kind of care about this other guy who's like the evil brother, and then he becomes like real evil, and so that's, I guess, in a way it's interesting, but it just seemed like there were a lot. It was weirdly too small, I guess. Like, I just was waiting for something bigger to happen. Like, it wasn't like painted on the same tapestry as like Godfather, where you have this just kind of this cultural thing going on, this, like, it's family, and it's all, it's America, and it's, like, this whole thing is happening, and it represents a lot of things. Like, this felt like a really small family film where they were gangsters,
and then this,
I just never got it. I was never able to really grasp
on this
it.
doesn't have the span, not that I'm, this doesn't have the span of Godfather, right, if I remember correctly, it takes place over,
over, like, time, a few, right? Yeah, like, a few weeks or something like that,
I mean,
yeah.
that doesn't matter to track, I don't think.
No, I mean, I'm just kind of saying, I mean,
yeah. No, I agree.
It, you know, they just... The painting is with shorter strokes, and those strokes aren't strong enough. So it just kind of never hits any of the cylinders that I guess. And also, you know, honestly, this is one of these movies where it was really hyped up, and then, you know, I caught it a month later, and it's like, you know, I think it has a lot to do with things, and it's a shame to say that, obviously.
Yes, sir.
But yeah.
All right. So as I effed up before, number two
for real this time.
Double again, both at 86. Unstoppable and Buried.
Buried is at 86?
Yes. Well,
wow.
Another Sundance film came out, hyped literally for 8 straight months until September release.
Through the roof hyped.
And
Bidding War, Lionsgate 1, it was a whole thing.
Yeah, and Buried, I would actually say, is worse than Unstoppable for me. Just in terms of
I'd agree. Yeah.
What it was going for. I mean, Tony Scott was unstoppable. He, you know, made a movie about a runaway train, and while I was watching, I enjoyed it, and I just couldn't believe that some movies, like I said, get a pass.
Yeah, I mean, it's
like 86%. Like that's. Right.
I mean, no, I mean, it's one of those movies where, when you read the 86%,
yeah,
it says, you know, passable enjoyment, passable enjoyment, passable enjoyment. And I guess what makes it kind of real surprising is like that 86% of all of critics felt that it was passably enjoyable. You know what I mean? Like, rarely is that, you know, because like a movie like Man on Fire, or even like Taken to Pelham 1-2-3, like, you know, it's like they're like around 50%, and it's like, you know, half the people say it's passably enjoyable.
Yeah, I mean, even top critics were 91%, yeah, which is even more surprising.
Right, and the other half of the people say it's just kind of, you know, it's shit. You know, it's just, you know, it's throwaway stuff. And I mean, that's such a fine line. You know, it really is a fine line. And so I guess it's just the fact that, like, you know, only 14% of critics that were, you know, said that it was like not, you know, that it was, you know, not passable entertainment. It's just strange. It's rare. It's just rare.
Very rare.
Rare to see. But then Red, though, I was like, Red, 70%. It's like, Jesus, strange.
Alright, bro.
Alright, number one, right? This is, or two, this is two.
Two, yeah. If we've already talked
about it. Oh, no, this is my one. Oh, yeah, this is my one. Okay, here we go. My number one is Catfish. Kind of heralded in a weird way. Made, like, actually, like, $3.5 to $4 million, which is pretty impressive for the movie. And a really interesting premise. Engaging. And ultimately exploitive and just kind of offensive and just kind of not really worth sitting through. You know, the message ends up being kind of stock and the filmmakers end up being kind of assholes. And I just didn't really like how the movie made me feel at the end. You know, making fun of retarded people isn't really funny if, you know, they're so mentally handicapped that they don't even know what's going on. And, like, holding a shot for, you know, a minute of them doing things that are just embarrassing, you know, that are embarrassing, you know, to watch, but also just to, like, it's not the watching so much as it is the realizing that someone else had a camera in their face for a minute and a half. You know what I mean? And so it hinges on the ending, and the ending didn't grab me. It pushed me away, and I just feel like, you know, it's the dirty cousin of Exit Through the Gift Shop, and, you know what Exit Through the Gift Shop does with intelligence in class. Catfish does with ignorance and crass.
Yeah, it is funny because, like, I would highly recommend the first two thirds. Like,
yeah, it's like, very engaging.
Like, I would engaging. Almost like,
we all watched it together. Yeah. You had this like party, and yeah, we were drinking beers and watching. It was like, whoa! It was like watching like a thriller. Like, whoa, shit. And then at the end, it was like eight of us, and like five of us loved it, and like three of us like, fuck you, you know. And that's it right there. And I guess that's a good thing. I mean, I guess, you know, rather to have a movie that polarizes than underwhelms. But I was just one of the people on the other side. So.
Yes, sir. All right. Now, my number one, in sheer terms of the rating factor,
right,
in terms of enjoyment, is Easy
Rider. Right. And I do disagree with
at,
you.
Yes, at 87%.
Right. You're wrong.
Yeah. Okay. Outside of the few moments, like Pocketful of Sunshine and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't feel like it was everyone has been saying, the John Hughes, inspired by it. Just felt like a retread that, and I don't know, I just thought, as it went on, kind of poor script.
Well, yeah, poor script, really?
As it went on.
Poor script.
Like, it felt very, like, full of, like a lot of movies, a lot of people hate about movies, like pop culture references and stuff, which I didn't, like the Tom Cruise thing, like, I didn't think that was funny.
Oh, like, yeah, that was bad. That
and,
was
like,
bad.
And there was, like, but there was more, like, I saw it in the middle of five movies at TIFF, so forgive me if I'm misremembering stuff. But like,
well, I'll say this,
stuff like that. Like,
it just does feel very written.
Yes.
But it does feel very written, you know, it's a very written movie. But I don't know, it's charming, you know. Actually, it's funny, I've read Burt V. Royal before, and it's probably going to sound a little strange just because, like, I don't know, he's not too famous, but I dated a girl who was in a Burt V. Royal play at her college. Yeah. Dog Eats God. And so I actually read the play, and then I saw the play, and I, you know, and the play is like an uneven mess of, like, just a thousand things, but it's got this strange charm to it, like this strange innocence to it, and, like, that's what Easy A has. Like, Easy A's got, like, all this you know, kind of stuff going on, and you know, has the obviously the you know Nathaniel Hawthorne thing going on in the background with the Scarlet Letter. But at the end of the day, it's like this strangely charming, innocent movie with like you know these great performances by Stanley Tucci and Patricia Clarkson, and obviously Emma Stone. And I think, I mean, as for the John Hughes thing, I think people got a little jacked up because he died. You know, and people, you know, were happy that there kind of serendipitously was this movie that seemed to kind of almost be like a swan song for the man. So yeah, I do agree with that. I don't, you know, I don't think it deserves to be on any top 10 lists, but like, but no, I mean, I'm glad that it got well received, and I'm glad that it made a lot of money at the box office.
All right.
And so are we
this
done
is
going to
be a monster podcast. Let's keep on.
Are we fucking done here?
Yes, we are done. Disappointing.
Disappointing? I'm gonna you want to go or I'm going to go?
There's a movie I had on my honorable mention that I'm taking off because you have it.
Right.
Quickly,
right,
Machete.
Right.
Now, in terms of disappointing, these are movies that I had extremely high hopes for.
Right. Same here.
That faltered quite a lot.
Same here.
So Machete, Robert Rodriguez, going to be this great exploitative movie, exploitation movie. Really didn't deliver on that. Really caught up in the
boring
political stuff. Very boring. The greatest scene from the movie, the intestine jumping out the window, is the best
like
part of the movie.
35 minutes in.
And
totally agree with you.
Yep. All right. So
let's pound through Predators. Same exact thing.
Yeah, actually, another Rodriguez production.
Literally the same exact thing. Robert Rodriguez, he's just overrated in general, and this year is the perfect example. Okay, go ahead.
All right, I'm Still Here. Now, this is one where, you know, just this build-up of, like, what is going to happen. Like, a year-long build-up, and...
2 years. 2 years.
2 years, correct.
2 years of his life. Of his life.
Yes, and while the movie, I guess, is interesting, there are moments where it felt like it was trying to... Did you see it?
I actually have not.
Yeah, I've seen it. In moments where it was trying to say something, especially with the ridiculous ending. And then once you learn it's fake, is another story. But this like there's moments in this film where like it's like almost Malick. They're trying to be like a Terrence Malick movie. Especially the last shot. It's like this long shot of him just walking through a river. And then it ends. Spoilers. For literally like a 4 minute shot. So, And the whole movie has these little moments like that where like you can just kind of see through all the bullshit but like I said there are funny moments but kind of like Catfish where I guess Catfish isn't fake whatever like the Donnie Darko might say but
right.
it feels false and kind of you're off put by it
yeah so kind of like I mean you know in a way like have you figured out kind of like
but it
Catfish.
Is funny because this is an impressive performance by Joaquin Phoenix for 2 years
right and I think I think this is a movie where as performance art it will have a future you know and you know I mean yeah, Joaquin Phoenix is a performer My next film is Wall Street Money Never Sleeps. I was really excited about this movie. I rewatched Wall Street, kind of remembered that really it was a very good kind of you know, glossy Shakespearean thing, you know, father, you know, the son and the father, you know, all this stuff that's going on here. And the original, you know, probably Charlie Sheen's best performance, you know, that or Platoon, you know, and, you know, just a few amazing scenes. Greed is good, obviously. The introduce, you know, when Charlie Sheen goes to Gordon Gekko's office and he has that whole thing about, like, you know, that whole big speech that they recite in Boiler Room, actually, Great stuff. Not really a lot of that in this movie. Just not, I mean, first and foremost, not as well written. Alan Loeb, just not as well written.
It was funny, too. Like, when this movie came out, people were like, oh, it's, you know, it takes place in 2008. Like, it's going to be a great.
Right, it seemed like the perfect sequel. It's like, you know, yes, like, Greed became good in real life. Right, and that trailer was good with the Stones, and there was some really great clips, and Shia. LaBeouf did actually seem like a really good casting of this kind of young upstart, and he was good, actually, and I thought he was pretty good. But like Carey Mulligan's not good. Like Carey Mulligan, kind of, she doesn't look good. She's poorly lit in the film. She kind of looks ugly, which is weird.
And I mean, also the writing she's given is not. I mean, she's
right,
just
and the writing she's given is poor. Like, there's a lot of tear-eyed moments that don't feel earned.
Yeah.
And Michael Douglas is just all over the place. I mean, I guess it's a good performance, but really, it's just kind of so Oliver Stone, it seems to be losing a step or something because, like, it's just a movie that seems over-directed or under-directed, but just
over
not...
in terms of, because they literally, there was, I think, 5 or 6 story strands going on at once. Like,
right, like, in that way, over-directed, but, like, under-directed, yeah. Character-wise. Like, okay. What was Stone... Yeah, no, I agree with you. Like, what was Stone saying to Douglas about his character? Like, oh, you're going to be bad, but spoilers, you're going to be good, but spoilers, you're going to be bad, but spoilers, you're going to be good. Like, in the same movie. And then, you know, like, there's, like, so all this, over, you know, not that Wall Street was subtle, but there's all this overt symbolism with literal, like, there's... at the end of this movie, there are bubbles that burst.
It's really a documentary about bubbles.
All right. Yeah. Exactly.
He finally made it. The movie he wanted to make, so...
All his life. So, so just in the end, and, like, when I saw it, I tried to defend it, and then, kind of like Iron Man 2, I just, I give up, because I knew that I was just lying to myself.
All right, well, the next two, we already talked about on my list, Buried, won't even get into it, but I expected something... You know, with that premise.
Right, and I'm right with you. Yeah. I read the script, I love the script, and I heard the script, and I hated the script. So, very strange experience. All
right, you go ahead and that's all.
Cyrus, disappointment because, I'm a champion of the mumblecore thing because, I mean, I want to make movies that are in that vein. You know, I want to make movies that are small and character driven and cheap.
I'm right with you.
First and foremost. So, to see a movie that kind of. Is that genre, that mumblecore genre, brought given $8 million by Fox Searchlight and literally like put into 1,500 theaters, 2,000 theaters?
Well, they wanted to be 500
with no stars other than Jonah Hill, and you know, and people saying, "Hey, listen," and then just for it to kind of just be, you know, a somewhat funny but you know, kind of somewhat tame movie about. Kind of like Step Brothers, yeah. You know. It just is a strange failure.
And I said this before, and this could be due, obviously, with the marketing, but the arc of the trailer was the arc of the movie. And, and that is always disappointing to me in terms of showing us too much. But I guess with a movie like this, I guess there's not a lot of meat on the bones, if you will.
Right, so, and that's the biggest problem. There's not enough meat on the bones.
All right, so mine, we already talked about Love and Other Drugs, just in terms of why it's disappointing, you know, Zwick, Gyllenhaal. Hathaway, supposed to be an Oscar hopeful, that did not
pan out, or won't pan out. Two is Leaves of Grass. Tim Blake Nelson. This movie was pretty much dropped like a bad habit, but I did actually get a chance to see it in theaters, and it's just not. You know, it's funny, and it's intellectual, and you know, you have two very strong performances from Edward Norton. But they're not as strong as you'd hope. Kara Russell's not as strong as you'd hope. And just everything about the movie is not as strong as you'd hope. It's got a great premise. You know, the twin brothers, one grows pot, one teaches, you know, school at Harvard or wherever he's teaching school. And he's forced to come back because he gets a call that his twin brother's dead. Turns out his twin brother's not dead. He's just in trouble with this local drug boss who is Richard Dreyfuss, who's not really in the movie. And it has a lot going for it, and it doesn't end up really going anywhere. There's a lot of wasted elements. And just the performances are nuanced, but, like, very one-note, you know. Edward Norton, he plays a hick, and he plays a dude who's not a hick, you know, who is intellectual.
Yeah.
And even though, like, you know, the point of the movie is that, like, they really are more similar than they think, by the end of it, everything's gotten so ridiculous, like, and violent that you just kind of get distracted.
Yeah.
So just kind of poorly paced, and just at the end of the day, you know, maybe Tim Blake Nelson should just, you know, kind of maybe do a little bit of acting for a while.
Yeah.
You know, maybe in the hands of someone like, an indie director like, you know, David Wayne or something like that. It could have been a really funny kind of romp, but it's not the case here.
I mean, for me, like, I think it's been a year and a half, right? Or almost.
Long time.
And, you know, seeing it in a festival, as we can talk about how the festival changes your perception of movies. I enjoyed it. You know, it was like a Coen Brothers-esque, elements of it were, like the darker elements were a Coen Brothers-esque. But, you know, I can see totally where you're coming from. But I still think it's one to check out.
All right.
Number two, Let Me In. Now, when this first got announced, I think 100% of the people shit on it, you know. At least fans of Let the Right One In. Half the other people had no idea what it was, and obviously still don't know what it is because it is
zero money. Yeah.
But for me, you know, Matt Reeves, Cloverfield, his last film was one of my favorites. I love Cloverfield.
Yeah.
And for this, you know, he could have really, you know, taken Let the Right One In and made something wildly different, really in his own sensibility, like what you know, really make something worthwhile. But this, and I think either the producers or Matt Reeves himself has said this is more from the novel than the original, which is just untrue because there are literally shots and the sets look. I mean, aside from it's in Utah, but there's literally sets that look the exact same, and even the sequence of shots are almost the exact same. Obviously, with the Matt Reeves touch, a little different. Thomas Alverson was more of a drier look, if you will. Matt Reeves, you know, has a lot of lighting flourishes and stuff like that. But yeah, and just at the end of this movie, like it's a hard movie to recommend if you've seen the original, and I still recommend the original over this, aside from. You know, one scene in this movie, which is one of my favorite scenes of the year, I guess for that. But that scene showed how much promise this could have had, and just did not deliver on that. So yeah, that's all I got to say about Lemmy.
Yeah, it's a shame.
All right.
My number one is
another mix.
How Do You Know? / is kind of a funny story. I mean, these are both movies that I love the filmmakers, and that is why it's so disappointing that the movies were disappointing. James L. Brooks, How Do You Know?, the guy who gave us Broadcast News and As Good As It Gets in terms of endearment, gives us a movie that's just, we've talked about it, you can listen to our review, just a mistake, and just, you know, miscalculation, poor acting, poor writing, you know, and just everything about it is just poor, and it seems like people are operating at different levels, not unlike The Tourist, people are operating on different levels. And you just don't know how so many talented people weren't able to communicate better. And that's really all I'll say. I mean, don't seek it out, but just know that it's a misstep. And, you know, hopefully James L. Brooks will make another movie in less than 5 years or 6 years, because that's usually how long it takes him to make a movie.
Yes.
And then it's kind of a funny story. I love Half Nelson. I love Sugar. I love Anna Boden and Ryan Fleck.
And that's an understatement.
And I love them. I just love. I love these people. And, I truthfully think they're the most talented people working in the industry right now, and to just have a movie where they kind of, you know, they just, it's about a kid who's a pretty privileged kid who's got these problems that at once seem very dangerous, but also very fickle. You know, it's not a strong lead performance by the lead guy. I think it's Keir Gilchrist. Just not a strong performance by him. I like Emma Roberts, and I like Zach Galifianakis, who does a really nice dramatic turn here, but the movie just, never really embraces this world that it's in. It's in a psych ward. It relies on very odd stereotypes that would have seemed dated in 75 when One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest came out, and it's 2010. So it looked like they needed to do more pre-production for this, and that maybe they rushed it, or maybe they just were lazy or something. Because at the end of the day, the world it takes place in is not a world at all. And so the story that's being told just kind of rings untrue. Yeah. So, that's...
I looked at it a little more, but...
In a nutshell.
My number one would be Tron Legacy.
Mm.
Not that different than Iron Man 2. It is a movie that... actually it has a less of a critical acclaim, obviously, than Iron Man 2. But it's a movie where mainstream audiences are kind of loving, like, in terms of the cinema score rating and, you know, just general reactions I've heard.
What's the cinema score rating?
I've heard it's high. I don't.
Okay, cool. Sorry. Oh, no worries.
Just as you can tell in our over, I think, 45-minute discussion on this, it's a movie that only gets worse in memory for me.
I cannot disagree with that.
And I think it is on this list the biggest gap of potential, of wasted potential. Yes.
I mean, also when you consider the budget. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Just unbelievable.
All right. Well, before we get to our top 10, let's hit up our worst films.
Let's do our worst. Knock it off. Yeah.
Now, these are there's two different kinds of worst films before we get into this.
Mm-hmm.
For me, there are films where I actively hate while I'm in the theater. Like, I just want to punch either you if you're next to me, or someone else. Don't want to be in it.
Someone involved.
Yeah. And then there's movies almost... I mean, they actually kind of blur sometimes, like movies like Extraordinary Measures, where they're just so dull and not necessarily poor filmmaking in terms of technical-wise, but just it's totally uninteresting and boring. And those are all actually sometimes worse. But these are movies that I physically hated and...
Just abhorred in the theater. Abhorred, like a physical, like your stomach shifted. Yeah.
Quick honorable mention list. The unreleased movie, The War, John Carpenter's Award. Just total failure on every level. It doesn't have a release yet, so I'm not trying to knock it too hard. It is coming out in the UK this month, but, don't know what he was going for here. It is a movie that I've seen it already 1,000 times. And it's a shame that Amber Heard, who I like, and Lindsay Fonseca, I think is how you pronounce it, the girl in Kick-Ass, which I think she's gorgeous. Not a great performance in Kick-Ass, but still. Anyways, and then quick
on. She was the girl in Kick-Ass, the girl.
Aaron Johnson's girlfriend, yeah. Extraordinary Measures, like we said, just doll filmmaking. Harrison Ford, kind of funny, I guess, in the role.
Yeah, kind of a bright spot, I guess.
Brendan Fraser, just stop.
Brendan Fraser.
Stop living
just
your life.
Just don't do it, dude. Just don't do it.
And then for me, I know we disagree on this, but Salt, like I said, just a movie. One of those movies I'm surprised it didn't make this list, just barely missed, that I physically hated while watching it. I was going in expecting a drama. I went to a pre-screening of it. Or a solid, action thriller, and it's just laughable, full of just ridiculous twists that I guess if I knew going in, I would have enjoyed it. But just every new one, kind of like Law Abiding Citizen, Kurt Warner's last movie, just kind of pissed me off up until the last frame of the movie. So there you go. Do you want to say your number five first? Because it's the last one of my
honorable mentions. Yeah. My number five is The Expendables, which is kind of, just another movie. When I saw it, I kind of was trying to give it the benefit of the doubt, but really just in time I've learned that it's just so cheap. It's such a cheap movie. Like, let's just get all the action stars from times past plus Jason Statham together and make a movie that's just like Commando, or Cobra or something. And you just watch it and you think, I see what they were doing, but just... why was it a good idea? It's got these weird dramatic scenes, like Mickey Rourke has this crying scene in it, and Jason Statham and Stallone have this strange little bonding moment where it's like serious, and it just is like there's 1,000 notes and they don't hit one of them. And I'm happy that all the dads in the world got to go out and see this movie and spend, fucking $13 remembering what it was like to be in the 80s and go see Tango and Cash while drinking Coors Lights and just being away from their wives. But if that's what it takes, then the film is in a sorry state. But
yes, I have to agree on all the accounts. Even the action, the few moments in the last, 30-minute action scene, were decent, I would say. Other than that, just that the action itself falls flat, which is the main reason I would think anyone would want to see this. Just odd character developments that don't disconnect on Dan said whatsoever.
It literally looks like Mickey Rourke does not know his lines. Like while he's while he's in the movie, it would appear that he does not remember what his lines are. And in like some of the featurettes that they put out, that's actually a funny thing in it. That Mickey Rourke came late and didn't know his lines, and that Sylvester Stallone makes a joke about tattooing, because he's tattooing him on one point or something, tattooing the lines to his back, so he could remember.
I mean, it does complete the terrible Sylvester Stallone trilogy.
It does.
Rocky Balboa, Rambo, and Expendables.
And here we are.
I really disliked all
of
those.
And here we are, decade later.
All right,
let's move down.
Yes. Now, our
my four, your five,
yeah,
same thing.
About
how do you know?
We're not going
to
get it.
We're just going to fucking move on. And I'll go to my four. Or three, rather. Pardon me. It is Leap Year. Now, you're asking yourself, Dan, there's always a slew of shitty rom-coms every year.
Yeah.
Why this one? Why, Dan, why this one, right?
Well, because I did see the Bounty Hunter.
Oh, wow. Because I was on a plane.
Kudos.
I was on a plane, and that is exactly what that movie is.
I think planes only have shitty... Because I saw Couples Retreat on a plane. It was the only choice. Anyways, go
ahead. The reason Leap Year is worse than The Bounty Hunter, and it's not, right? But the reason it's worse than The Bounty Hunter, in my mind, is because The Bounty Hunter stars Jennifer Aniston and Gerard Butler. And if you are a human, and you have seen films with these people, you know... that they are not particularly talented. They are good-looking, yes. So if you're going to see a rom-com with two of them starring, directed by the dude who gave us Fool's fucking Gold, you know that there's going to be a level of mediocrity that just, that's tailored to that particular quadriplegic group of talented individuals. Pardon me. So, Leap Year, it's Amy Adams and Matthew Good, directed by Anand Tucker, right? So it's like, whoa, switch it up. Like, dude who directed one of the Red Riding movies, right? Yeah. Talented individual. You know, he directed another movie, it's escaping me now, but a very, very, another really good movie. I think it was like an English film, like a course of film. What was it?
I'm looking it up.
Okay. Going. Anyway. Shop Girl. That's I love Shop Girl.
Yeah, me too.
I love Shop Girl. So it's like, dude who directed Shop Girl, directing another romance. And you're like, okay, it's coming out in January, but maybe that's because the studio just didn't know what to make of it. No, that's not why. It just was a really silly movie about, like, something. About, like, she's going to Ireland because on Leap Year, on Leap Day, you can propose to. And that's, like, another thing. Like, why is it called Leap Year? Because it's Leap Day, is when she's doing it, right?
Does she go for a year?
No. Oh, okay. Like, she's going to propose to Adam Scott, her fiance or whatever, on Leap Day.
Is Adam Scott, like, does he do anything in this?
Like, no, he's in like, two scenes. Okay. And so it's just, like, you know, Matthew Good's this dude who is, like, forced to give a ride, and, like, guess what? They don't like each other in the beginning.
Wait.
Yeah, and then so what happens is, like, all these crazy, like, shenanigans happen, and then they realize that they're in love with each other. And then at the end, he proposes to Amy Adams, and Matthew Good's standing right there, and it's like, oh shit, what is she gonna do? And guess what she does? She chooses Matthew Good because it's a fucking rom com, just like every other movie that you've ever seen. And I'm just saying to you that it's just a shame that all these talented people got together and did this. I mean, because that's just time in life. Matthew Good even said that he did it for the money, and because it was in Ireland where he lives.
Hey,
and that's
more power to him.
And that's why we love Matthew Good.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Did I say Skyline?
You have three to go. Three. You have Skyline.
Did I already say Skyline?
No, you didn't.
Right. But now you have. One off here. Cause okay, anyways.
Yeah, we are one off. I apologize.
So, Skyline, yeah. Just
you do two in a row.
Moments. Very few moments. Particularly the last 5 minutes were not good, but they were, I don't know, not, anyways, they showed some type of promise. But the rest of the movie is just utter shit. Just utter shit all around. Takes place in one location, which I knew going in. A lot of people didn't, based on the amazing, I mean, in terms of marketing, excellent marketing by Universal / Relativity.
And it's doing well overseas.
Yeah, but just literally lower than TV quality garbage. No, I mean, technical-wise, yes, the visual effects are watchable. Not impressive at all, but watchable. That would be fine if this was 100% action, but there's a lot of character things that they attempt to do that just fall flat. The guy from Dexter, who was actually in another worst movie, The Expendables,
yeah.
Most of the year.
Yeah, The Expendables, yeah.
Yeah, just really terrible character. I don't want to talk about anymore, so.
Okay,
all right. My number three.
Yeah, go, you do three.
Number three is the Dennis Dugan joint, Grown-Ups.
Right.
Offensively unfunny.
Just in another movie where just so many talented people are just doing something that just doesn't feel even possibly possible because it's so just not good.
You know, I didn't like I now pronounce Chuck and Larry. Was that his last?
No. You don't mess with Zohan, Chuck and Larry, funny people.
Dennis Dugan.
Oh, Dugan. Dugan.
Yeah,
Dugan.
Not
sorry.
So, you know, I kind of could expect going in, but it plays up all the things you kind of hate about his movies and doesn't have, like, you know, the Happy Gilmore-esque things that you do love about his earlier movies. I can't believe I'm talking to him like he's a director that we look back on his filmography. But,
if you were one of the $300 million worth of people in the world who loved Grown-Ups, you'll be happy to know that Just Go With It is coming out in February.
And Grown-Ups 2, they are planning. So, look
forward
to good.
That.
Good. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, let's do three. Or two for me, and your two, but my two is Prince of Persia, just the worst written movie of the year. And that's it.
Yep.
Okay.
I'll do, this is your number one, my number two, Cop Out. It came out
the worst directed movie of the year.
Yeah, well, I'm last Airbender.
Okay, my bad. The second worst directed movie of the year for you.
Yeah, just Kevin Smith, kind of trying, not really, to do something different, and just falling, whatever.
Missing
worse,
every fucking step.
Interface,
just, my God.
Unfunny.
Poorly paced.
Yeah.
Poorly cut. Poorly acted. Bruce Willis much like Mickey Rourke in Expendables, looks like he doesn't know his lines. Yeah.
Another bad year for Bruce Willis.
Another bad year.
Fucking Surrogates and something else that he did that was terrible.
Another bad year?
Yeah. Okay, number one, The Last Airbender for me. Just everything Dan said about Cop Out and worse. But actually not unfunny. I laughed my ass off. But not to the films. I don't think that's what I was trying to go for. Terrible child acting. If you can make fun of Jake Lloyd, I think.
You can make fun of Jake Lloyd and Anakin.
But he literally is Marlon Brando. When you look at these kids. I would give anything in the world to go on set one day and just see what was going through his mind and what it was like.
I would give anything in the world to have a Being John Malkovich door and go inside M. Night Shyamalan's head.
That's even better. One up.
And just see, hear those thoughts. That subconscious.
All right, so that counts down our worst films of the year.
All right, let's do it. Let's do the best.
Let's do the best. Let's run through these babies. Honorable mentions. I'll throw out mine and you throw out yours. Mm-hmm. We don't have to talk about them. I'm going to skip over the ones that Dan has on his list so we can go in depth and be more surprised. For me, Enter the Void was top 10. Very close. It is one of those movies that is an experience and not so much a film that you're going to go into and being glued to every frame. It's more of a, you like the director's vision more so than the film, I would say. What do you think?
Right. Yeah, I totally agree.
And then... highly recommended, obviously, if it is my top 15. 127 Hours, a film that I loved it. I really liked it on first viewing. And then second viewing, just barely missed my top 10, but it died down a little bit. But it's still one of the great, one of the most uplifting experiences of 2010. James Franco, great, great, great performance. Just a few elements I didn't like kind of knocked it off the top 10. Fish Tank, another film I saw almost a year and a half ago in TIFF. Katie Jarvis, good. I don't think she's one of those. I don't think she gives a knockout performance like Jennifer Lawrence in Winter's Bone, we'll talk about. But for me, it's Andrea Arnold's directing that I love in this movie. Like, just a realistic kind of like right in your face cinema verite directing. Kind of no frills, just there. Michael Fassbender, really solid. Then Toy Story 3, another one that I loved watching, just barely missed my top 10. Talked about endlessly all year, so we don't have to go into that. But
yeah. Right, well, and for my honorable mentions, not much overlapping. The Fighter, you can read my review, kind of totally articulates what I'm saying. Just a bastard of a movie and a really ambitious piece of filmmaking by David O. Russell that will find, and has found its audience, which is nice. 127 Hours, I agree with you, Jordan. One of the most uplifting movies, but just at the end of the day, feels like it's about someone who maybe just should have called somebody before he went to go climb. And Tangled, which is right above Toy Story 3 and How to Train Your Dragon in terms of animated movies. This one, for one reason or another, just really spoke to me more than the other two. It just seemed like a throwback and something just really wholesome from Disney, and I love to see it, and I love Mandy Moore's voice, and I love Zachary Levy's... comedy.
Yeah,
and there
totally
we are.
Agree. Yeah.
And Never Let Me Go, we talked about this a little bit earlier, so I'm not going to go into details about that one. And finally, Wild Grass, Alain Renaud, just a really old dude who's directed some really great really fucking movies, dude. You know, Hiroshima with My Love, Hiroshima My Love, or Hiroshima with Love. Yeah, My Love, Hiroshima My Love. And great movie. That's a great movie from the 50s. They pretty much all takes place in a restaurant. And Wild Grass is a restaurant that all starts because of a purse snatch, and it's a rough
a movie, not a restaurant. Sorry, you said a restaurant that all starts.
Oh, my bad. Yeah, the movie that all starts with a purse snatching. And Hiroshima is in a restaurant. My apologies. Yeah, but anyway, yeah. So a rough romance. It doesn't let you love the characters off the bat, does a lot of interesting things with the camera. So kind of that would be like that spot in a way is interchangeable with Enter the Void because they're both stories that have been told before in ways that we haven't seen before. Yeah. So totally. Yep. And right. Your 10, go.
Number 10, flipped. Already talked about it.
Yes, I like it. My 10, Carlos talked about it and definitely seek it out.
My number 9 is Dogtooth, kind of the opposite film that flipped is taking Greek family. This would be on my most overlooked if anyone got a chance to look at it. But it is like this audacious, like, a film that's so uncomfortable while you're watching it, and at the end, still, I remember walking out of theater just speechless in terms of what I would say to this. Oh, but we took a film stage writer, James Battaglia. First time I met him, we saw this movie together in theaters.
Whoa.
And just like a movie that you just don't know, you're not sure why it was made, and then you start to realize, kind of pull the strings together. Just some of the most effective scenes I've seen this year. Wildly violent and odd. So just a warning. But I would seek it out if you are a cinephile like us.
Yeah, I have yet to. I have it on my computer right now, and I cannot wait to watch it.
Yeah.
My number 9 is Inception.
Inception.
And it is good. Quality entertainment. Great score, great editing, great directing, and really solid performances. The writing, I guess, in multiple viewings, does leave a bit to be desired, but, you know, what Hollywood should be doing more of.
Yeah, I mean, this is on my list, so we'll just talk about it now. For me, it wasn't going to be on there, but that first viewing where you're just, like, every single frame...
It has to be on there.
Yeah, every single frame of that movie, you're just, like, trying to unpack, like, what does this mean, what does this mean? Even the second viewing in theaters, I think it still holds up really well. Home viewings, not so much like Dan said, but just kind of bold filmmaking this should be the standard, and it's not.
It should be the standard, exactly, it should be the standard. Speaking of the standard in studio films, you're number 8.
True Grit. Now, we don't get westerns too much.
We don't get good westerns, ever.
Westerns. And
310 Yuma, Open Range, off the top of my head in the last 10 years.
Did you like Appaloosa?
Appaloosa's okay. Yeah.
True Grit. Yeah, this is a film that I was wildly anticipating, and while it did not quite deliver in No Country for Old Men style, I still love these characters. That's what I love about this movie, the interchanges between them. Every scene, there's something going on under the surface. Josh Brolin, not so much, but Matt Damon, Jeff Bridges, and Hailee Steinfeld, newcomer Hailee Steinfeld.
All drove great performances.
Still, like I said, a few problems with it, but it's one of those films that I have only seen it once, so I really think it will get better as time goes on.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Number 8 for moi is The American, the Anton Corbijn movie starring George Clooney with the very solid Hitchcockian, Saul Bassian poster. It's a slow movie. It's a little bit of an obviously written movie. And when we saw it, I think we knew that there was definitely some serious problems with it, but for some reason, it stuck with me. The images, first and foremost, one of the biggest ones being opening credit sequence when he's driving through a tunnel light is just striking his car as he's driving, stuff like that. You have to seek those shots out. So kind of in the way that Tarsem does so in The Fall. Yeah. You were talking about that earlier. Corbin does that here, and it's just an impressive feat, and I think it sticks with me, so it needs to deserve a spot.
I totally agree. Yeah, that I would just go as far to say that every shot is impressive. Like every right. There's not a wasted.
Every shot's a work of art.
And but for me, the reason it didn't make my top 10 is something about what they're doing in the last last few minutes of the movie didn't really connect. I don't know if you agree.
It almost seems like they tried to tie it together kind of quickly. Like it almost seemed like it shouldn't have even ended.
Yeah,
kind of a totally thing. And I do agree with you. Yeah.
All right. Already talked about, but number 6 is Carlos. As my picture, you can say tell on best films 2010. Full of beautiful women, also
full of beautiful women.
Also a good reason to watch this. But like we said, just an epic. You know, 5.5 hours of just
flies by.
Yeah, flies by. Not really slow. Edgar Ramirez. We debated about doing performances, but this would be number one.
Yeah,
number one for me. Like in terms of just a character that I was just waiting to see what he was going to do. Like, even though, I mean, I don't know really much about the history when I went into this, and now it's just kind of a great...
Yeah, I mean, you created a character and just owned it, you know? Definitely one of the best performances of the year.
Yes.
Number 7 for me is Winter's Bone. Speaking of one of the best performances of the year, Jennifer Lawrence and John Hawkes both destroy this film. This film has a couple lull points and everything.
But the noir style slash plot line and the amazing performance by Miss Lawrence and Mr. Hawks just pushes this movie into my top 10 because it is just powerhouse
acting. What do you think about this? If a lot of people don't love Ellen Page in Inception, people are saying, I heard a recommendation that Jennifer Lawrence should have had her spot. Do you think that would have been a good
Inception
as a character?
I just thought
I'd put that in your mind.
But, I mean, I think the architect was meant to be spunky, and I think that Ellen Page came across maybe a little too frail.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Jennifer Lawrence takes serious stuff in this movie. She's going to handle a little bit of dream, a little bit of Cher dreaming.
Yeah. Winter's Bone, definitely loved her performance, and John Hawks, and, I mean, most of the performances, but, it didn't make mine. I don't know. Mm-hmm. The movie itself. But anyways, number five for me is A Prophet. Jacques Audard.
Yeah.
Now this is another film saw a while ago, but finally got a U.S. release. Someone actually. I was listening to AV Talk today. They compared it to almost The Wire, like in terms of methodical.
I'd agree.
Just engaging. I think it's over 3 hours. Look at this rise of a prison inmate.
It's not over 3 hours. It's like 2:20. But really, just.
It feels like they're in a good way. It feels
super
very
engaging. Yeah. Epic.
Epic. Yes. I would hardly recommend this. It is on Netflix. Watch instantly. So, check that out.
My number six. I'm at. I'll do six here. Is Waiting for Superman. The public school documentary by Mr. Davis Guggenheim. Pretty standard in the way it's structured, but an issue that needs to be seen and an issue that is very, 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 very well researched and well debated in this film. Education's one of, if not the most important thing right now in our country, and the fact that both unions and the people against unions and the teachers in the unions are all kind of working against each other in this very strange, very American, very hypocritical way will break your heart and pump you up at the same exact time. And people like Jeffrey Canada are highlighted, people who literally are trying to save our world right now. And so I just feel like it's a movie that needs to be. And this was a year for the documentary. I mean, I feel like most years are, actually, in a weird way. And I'm sure that if I actually did not get a chance to see Inside Job before this list, and I'm sure that if I had seen it, it probably would have been my top list just because I love Charles Ferguson's No One in Sight. So this is a definitely see it and just kind of make your own decisions about what to do, but also heed the warnings and heed the facts and heed the opinions of people who are in the trenches as we speak. Yep. So, well done, Mr. Guggenheim.
Yes. Now, since R4 is the same, you want to hit with your five?
And we'll talk. Yeah, hit with my five. I've brought it up already, and I'm rewatching it now, and I'm very happy I put it on my top 10. The Ghost Rider, Roman Polanski's return to quality filmmaking. See it. It is accessible as hell. Ewan McGregor's best performance in years. And actually, right next to I Love You, Philip Morris, which is another great performance by him this year. So, check it out.
Disagree. No, I did like it. It didn't have quite the same effect for me, but it's solid.
Thanks.
All right. Now, our number four is the same.
Our collective number four.
Yes. David Fincher's The Social Network.
The Social Network. I do not want to talk about this, really, but let's just say that it is an impressive piece of filmmaking and one that when he goes up there to get his best picture and best director and his Oscars.
I cannot say
a long time that coming and well deserved, and no other film both culturally and cinematically defined what this year was than this.
Amen, brother.
And that's it.
All right. What is your
my number trois is Valhalla Rising, directed by Mr. Nicholas Winding Refn, the Terrence Malick meets, I don't know, a really hardcore rock video and super ultra violence Viking story starring Mads Mikkelsen. It's on Netflix. Watch instantly. Live your life. Watch it. It's only 90 minutes long, but it'll feel like it's 3 hours, and I mean that in the best way possible.
And I felt that in not the best way possible, okay, but I still liked it. And all right, number three for me is Black Swan. A little bit of disagreement here. Just so captivating. Natalie Portman, hands down, best female performance, even over Jennifer Lawrence, I would say, for me. Bold.
Bold,
I think, and there's no question incorrect that she will take the Oscar.
I agree with that. I think there's no question she'll take the Oscar.
Just
Obviously not subtle at all, but that is kind of why I loved
not
it.
Not by just, a fucking long shot.
It just amped up until the end, and just
it amped up. It amped up a lot. What it was that it amped up, I still don't really know, but I'm sure that it was great in the eyes of many. Okay. And so let's move on.
You don't want to go further. All
right. Well, no, I mean, we can talk about it more. I mean, you know, I mean, I've said, I've said to you, I'm still, the jury for me is still out on this movie. I honestly feel kind of like Enter the Void, similarly with Enter the Void. They feel like exercises in film that, for me, the exercise will eventually overtake my dislike of the actual story being told, right? And so I feel like in a year we're going to be talking about Black Swan, and I'm going to say, you know, I was probably wrong about that a year ago. But then if I were to go back to this moment right now, I'd be like, well, you know what? Not really, you know, because I understand where I am right now. I don't really know what the movie is trying to say. I feel like Aronofsky's earlier movies kind of have more of a focus, and this kind of seemed like a lot of shock and awe, and that is a good part of it, because the B schlock is almost what makes it so oddly lovable.
I mean, I thought
it I just don't know how far that takes me, honestly.
I think it was focused in terms of the insanity that it was. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't... Everything is so perfectly timed and focused, like, in terms of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
no, the pacing's good. I mean, the pacing's solid, but, like, you know, the writing's very... Just the writing's
it is
very,
not a good
very,
script.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the strongest of scripts and all that. And also, I mean, Portman's performance I do love, but it is just kind of, you know, a downward roller coaster. You know, whereas with Jennifer Lawrence, you had this subtle, you know, this was a young woman who... There seemed to be more layers into her performance, and more layers into Edgar Ramirez's performance, and more layers in Jesse Eisenberg's performance than there was in this woman's performance. And while it was a very powerful performance, not unlike Christian Bale's performance in The Fighter, there was a lot of acting, but really it was all like in one direction, one fell swoop, in one kind of thing, one note, and I just don't know how far that takes you. And so that's kind of how I feel about it, and I don't know.
All right,
man.
All right. I'll go number two, I guess.
Hit me number two.
Number two for me is The Secret in Their Eyes.
Which would have been right with me, right with you had I counted it.
Oh, yeah.
This year.
It
would have been right up.
Yeah, this film, just like, it's one of those movies, actually my girlfriend saw it and told me this. It's one of those movies where when you leave a theater, you're like, oh, wait, I just was watching a movie and I wasn't in this world. Like, it's
that is
so,
exactly what it is like.
And it's just so enveloping. Like, these characters, you know, if you have, which I'm sure, it did well, though, but I don't know if that many people know about it.
Right.
I mean, obviously it won the Oscar for Best Foreign Film, and I think it grossed a considerable amount in the U.S., but it tells this story, a romance tale set over a crime drama, like, a few decades. And it is just one of the most interesting...
It just traverses every genre, like, with such poise. It's, like, unbelievable.
Yep.
And I think I honestly think it's a movie... not unlike Children of Men or 25th Hour, that like kind of just will sneak up to the top every single time you talk about decades lists and stuff like that. I honestly think
so. Totally. Yeah, and there's I mean, even it, just not in terms of story, technical wise, the great one single take in the stadium scene was great.
Amazing.
And but also in terms of script, there are like moments, like there's certain lines that like change the way it sounds cliche to say, but change the way I look at life. Like, you know, like I don't know, there was for me to recall now, but but just in terms of the passage of time and, you know, lost love.
Right.
Like, there's just little lines that are just, it's so well done. I just can't recommend it enough. It is on DVD now and Blu-ray, so
Seek it out.
Your number two. Hit me.
Oh, my number two is Restrepo, which is the somewhat cinema verite documentary via Sebastian Junger. And I think it's Timothy Huntingring.
Yeah.
Hunting Winton or something, and very amazing. And Vanity Fair hired these dudes to literally be in a valley in Afghanistan, in OP Restrepo, which is like a little base in this valley, named after the medic who got killed, Juan Restrepo, for a year, with cameras, just you know, watching people die, watching people fight, and it's eye opening.
Yeah.
You know, the best documentary about war I've seen. I mean, you know, the Eugene Cherokee "Why We Fight" documentary is amazing, in another way. But this is just so raw. You know, this is "Don't Look Back," but in war. Like, this is D.A. Pennebaker in the middle of war. And, like, it's just mind-blowing. You know, it, this is, you know, this is, you know, people tell, keep, there's been, Frederick Wiseman, you know, boxing gym. Yeah. People have been giving that a lot of credit. I mean, this is that in the middle of chaos, and it's just, it is, it fucks you up, you know, and but in the best way. I mean, it's so important that movies like this keep getting made.
Totally. I honestly don't know why it's not on there. I think maybe because you had it, so you were going to talk about it anyways, but for me,
well, no,
I
would love it. With me, like, I'm you know, topical film. I believe in film as an art form and as a something that can in some way change things. You know, obviously the idealist in me. So when you see a movie like this, you think, yes, like maybe art can still affect some sort of change. You know, in this crazy world that we're living in. So
And then I think it's the second highest reviewed movie, second best reviewed movie.
Right, that makes me so happy.
True. Yeah. And some detractors I've heard. Say they don't like it because it doesn't take a side, and that's why I love it. So, whatever. Fuck that.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, whatever. Yeah.
All right. Number one.
Same number one.
Yes. Exit through the gift shop.
And you know, I really, when I saw it, I liked it. But if you were to tell me that it was going to be my favorite movie of the year, I would have been skeptical.
Yeah.
You know, knowing that old Russell film was coming out, knowing that a Danny Boyle film was coming out, knowing that a David Fincher film was coming out, knowing that a Darren Aronofsky movie was coming out. You know, the fact that Banksy, who I didn't even really know about, honestly, until this movie, frankly, if I'm being honest, was going to be number one, then I would have probably punched you right in the mouth, and here I am. And so, yeah, I just, meta filmmaking / great documentary work / just funny as hell, Reese Ivins, amazing narration.
Yeah. Always engaging.
Shepard Fairey, you know, very personable dude, and you just learn a lot about stuff you didn't even know you liked.
Yeah. And unlike Catfish, that what happens at the end.
The satirical, somewhat, you know, it sparks discussion.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sparks discussion, and it's hypnotic in a way. So that's it,
and that is on Netflix Watch Instantly. So there's another no excuse.
No excuses.
I mean, unless you
restrip them. My two favorite, my three top favorites, are all on Watch Instantly right now.
And so Valhalla, Network comes out in a week.
On Watch Instantly?
No, on Blu-ray.
No, I'm saying they're all my top three are all on Watch Instantly.
Yeah, so you can
Valhalla, Restrepo, and Exit. So, yeah. I'm gonna just watch all those again tonight.
Nice.
Apparently.
So I can think we can safely say our film stage movie of the year is Exit the Gift Shop. Anyway, so that concludes 2010, Dan.
That's 2010. Hopefully 2011 will be as good. Hopefully a little better.
And I think
it was a good year, but
I think we said this last year. Well, no, actually no, I don't think we said this last year, but blockbuster wise, should be better.
It should be better.
But who knows? Could be a string of disasters.
I mean, there's a lot of superhero movies coming out.
There are. It's funny because something's got to fail. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm just thinking, like, what is going to be that movie that just doesn't?
Oh, I mean, something. Are you kidding me? Every year, something's got to fail. But there's so many this year.
Yeah.
Green Lantern, Captain America.
But none of them are outright. You can say, like, you can predict. Like, this year, I guess Iron Man 2.
Think that Thor is going to have some problems. And I think that Green Lantern is going
to
have some problems.
And Captain America, just because it's from Johnson, has to.
Yeah, but I mean, I think Captain America of those three, we've seen the least of those three from that.
Oh yeah.
As of yet, we haven't seen the trailer yet. But like, Captain America, I'm no expert, but Captain America is the most known of those three characters, right? And Chris Evans is probably the most. I mean, Chris Evans is a very charming guy. I think that
Ryan Reynolds probably a little more.
Right, maybe, yeah. But I think that Captain America has the best chance, you know.
And I think we can also collectively say our most anticipated film together is The Tree of Life.
Oh, God. I cannot wait. Counting the days, literally.
Yes. So, yeah. Solid 2010. For people that say it's bad, I don't necessarily agree
with them. Like every year, you know, you find
except
the
for
good.
20, except for 2007, which was just a string of
matches. The year from heaven, but
yeah.
Yeah, but every year, I mean, you know, people make good movies.
No,
you know, and if you seek them out, you know, you'll live a good life.
Yes, yes. Yeah, we'll be back. Can't see us doing Season of the Witch, even though I might see it. But yeah. Whatever, we'll be back.
We'll be back soon.
We'll be back soon, yeah.
For something good.
Thank you for listening. You can follow us at twitter.com/thefilmstage.
And you can follow me at DJ Mecca at Twitter.
Yeah, and email us at editors@thefilmstage. We'd love to answer some questions at the end. And if you disagree with any of these picks, or please write in on what your favorite films of the year are. Black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. All right, you can thank you,
and have a happy new year.
For a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down, tell him that God's gonna cut you down, tell him that God's gonna cut you down.